You may have heard of us, but you might not know Bank First is a community bank that has no fee ATM access, interest and perks earning checking accounts. With online and mobile banking, mortgages for every stage of life, and modern business banking for businesses, small and big. We keep it all together to put you first. Do you bank with us? You should. Bank First is an equal housing lender and a member FDIC.
Well, it's Saturday morning. We are in the Farm Bureau studios. I'm Charlie Winfield. Mark Gregory is on assignment. And by assignment, I mean he's not here. He is somewhere where he did not have to watch the baseball game last night. Had he done so, he would have had to watch it like early this morning. So Bart's out of town, but today we've got an exciting episode of Saturday Tell the Old Guy Why He's Wrong. I got my college guy, Lewis Creekmore, here. Lewis knows ball. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How are you, Mr. Charlie?
Man, first of all, rule number one, there's no mister here. All right, we got that?
It's a force of habit. I apologize.
There are no misters in the Farm Bureau studios. Not how it works. By the way, Farm Bureau agents in all 82 of Mississippi's counties. If you're doing the county count, you know how many counties Tennessee has?
Tell me.
Greater or less than 82?
I'll say greater.
Greater is right. 95. So 82 in Mississippi, and any of them that you're in, you can find a Farm Bureau agent. Check them out, Home Life, whatever you need. And I am working on my second cup of Strange Brew coffee this morning. So this is not our Sunday coffee show. This is just a Saturday get-together, talk a little baseball show. All right, Lewis, first of all, your family is a baseball family. You grew up probably hearing more about baseball than you ever cared to.
I did. Both my parents graduated from Mississippi State, so Mississippi State athletics as a whole has been a huge part of my life. As long as I can remember, I've been watching Mississippi State football, Mississippi State basketball, and especially baseball. I remember going to the old dude with my dad and my brother sitting in the outfield any chance we could, and then, of course, watching it on TV as the coverages became more available, and then, obviously, as a student, try not to miss an inning.
Now, Cotton State's baseball, just let's set a little background here. So one of the things that is great about baseball and great about the summer is you see guys all over the country playing baseball. I'm going to, for this year, for the first time, I'm going to go up to the Cape and watch some guys play baseball, hit up some areas around there. But we have the Cotton State's Baseball League. Your family's involved with that. Tell us what that is.
Yes, sir. So you may have mentioned it, but my family, we're from New Albany, Mississippi. And there in New Albany, we have the B&A Bank Park, which is kind of our sportsplex type deal. But back in 2008, my dad and his partner, Frank Dodds, they started what's known as the Cotton States Baseball League, which serves as just another summer baseball league for what started as just college athletes, college baseball players. And, you know, when we first started, it was mainly just baseball players from around the area, surrounding states, but mainly just the state of Mississippi. And what's kind of funny is that in that starting year, we actually had Nick Vickerson and Jet Butler, who played on opposing teams. Jet Butler, actually, he was only there for about 2 weeks. I think Coach Cohen sent him up to New Albany because he wanted to get him some action at catcher. So he lived with my family and I and got some work in at the good old Cotton States down up there in New Albany. But, you know, that's been 15 years now, you know, since it started, and it's evolved, you know, not only from having the college league in the summers, but having high school and junior high as well. And the high school and junior high leagues also carry over into the fall.
So let's talk about last night. Mississippi State on the road at Vanderbilt loses it 4-0. For State, Cal Steven he doesn't win the game, but he eats up 7 1/3. Cam Schulke has to come in, face a couple of batters to end it. Steven gives up 4 runs. They were all earned. First pitch of the game, home run. I didn't think it was a terrible pitch. Now and then, a guy's just going to square one up on you. I thought, and you tell me if I'm wrong, I thought Vastine took a pretty good pitch. It looked like he was sitting on it all the way, got what he was looking for, where he thought it would be, and hit it out.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it kind of reminded me of setting the tone early. Go back to the CWS finals with Rowdy Jordan kind of setting the tone early with that first pitch of the game. That's kind of what it reminded me of.
I've always argued that solo home runs don't beat you, but I thought when Espinal hits the home run on a 2-2 pitch on a ball that just kind of spun in the middle of the plate, that was a big deal.
You know, as a pitcher, you never want to hang a breaking ball, especially over the heart of the plate. That's just, I mean, you hear it, the hang and bang phrase all the time. And so you got to give kudos to the hitter for, you know, sitting back on it and taking it where it lies. But as a pitcher, you got to make that pitch. But it really is hard to say that, you know, you lose the game off the third batter of the game, because, you know, you hope your offense kind of gives you something, you know, in the long haul. But I guess, you know, looking back on it, that that second home run really did cost you the game.
So, you know, you look at the game yesterday, I thought the other thing that jumps out to me, bottom of the second inning, you get a ground out to start it, then Polk singles. And the thing that Vanderbilt does as well, I say as well as anybody, Kentucky runs the bases a lot, but Vanderbilt is going to run, and they're going to run, and they're going to run. So you steal second base. Then the wild pitch moves Polk to third, and I thought getting him to third base with one out was a big deal, because then it's just a routine ground ball to second base, gets the run home. And I thought the first two innings were kind of, I guess I would say it this way, the first inning is not who Vanderbilt is this year. They are not a home run hitting team. In fact, when you go look at the numbers, neither State nor Vanderbilt hit a lot of home runs in league play. That was out of character. I thought the second inning was exactly who Vanderbilt is, which is routine single, stolen base, be opportunistic, move to third, ground ball scores him, and now you've got a crooked number up there in front of you. Well, I guess you did after the two, but you add another one, and you're down 3-0. And I guess the thing that puzzles me the most looking at this game yesterday is I don't remember a time recently, at least, when I pick up the stat sheet. If you blocked out everything on this sheet and you handed me nothing but the strikeout totals and told me that we struck out four times in an SEC baseball game on Friday night, I'm saying we just run-ruled some guys. We got two hits. And then the other thing that would have puzzled me if you'd have given me that is I would have said, I bet we were beating balls into the ground all day. But when you look at the numbers, flyouts 11, ground outs 12. And you say, well, why does that matter? I've always kind of been one of these guys that the ground outs and the flyouts are about the same. What it tells me is, for the most part, you're staying around the middle of the baseball, right? You give me all that, and there's no way I think we have just two hits.
I was looking at it, and like I said earlier, I had to go back and rewatch the game because I didn't watch it live. And it was just looking at the box score before I started watching it, I would have told you that we had thought that we had a shot at winning, but in reality we were never really even in it.
All right, so coming out of the game yesterday, what is the thing that troubles you most about what you saw or about where we're going?
I think after last night, it's going to be an uphill battle, because you're almost in must-win mode from here on out, I think. But you know, they came in a little short-staffed, and so that was huge for Cunningham to go nine innings. I mean, go the distance. And not only go the distance, but do it in the dominating fashion that he did. So that's kind of a that's kind of a gut check there if your offense can't get to him, even, you know, later in innings when his pitch count's getting up. But for him to save that bullpen, you know, with them being a little short-staffed, I think that's huge for them. And so definitely going to be an uphill battle today and tomorrow. Going to have to scrap for sure.
I thought the thing about Cunningham, he throws 122 pitches, 70-something of them for strikes. Opponents, Cunningham's an interesting guy, because if you look at his numbers, he's thrown 40 innings. He's getting about a strikeout an inning. But coming into the game yesterday, he had six starts in the SEC, had pitched 31 innings. So he's basically a five-inning guy. He goes a complete game yesterday. Opponents now hitting 201 against him. It's odd to see a guy holding opponents to hitting 201 with an ERA that flirts with five. Yes, it was dominant in the sense of, I guess so many times when I think of a dominant pitching performance, I think of somebody striking out 18 or 16 or what have you. Or I think about somebody getting, I think, Chris Stratton going down to LSU and having 21 ground ball outs. He just kind of kept it in the strike zone, and we just didn't square it up.
Couldn't do anything with it.
All right, we shook up the lineup a little bit yesterday in terms of the batting order. We drop Imani Larry down in the order, and then we move Bryce Chance up to the top of the order. And I guess I would say two things about that. The first is it didn't work yesterday. The second is that doesn't mean that it won't work. You can't judge a lineup on four at-bats, a player, right? I like, particularly when you look at league-only numbers, Bryce Chance has been one of the better guys. He's getting on base. I say give it a shot.
I agree. That's what I was thinking. And I feel like with Coach Lemonis' lineup, some of them are, you know, when he does mix it up, sometimes he reverts back to the way it was. And so I would actually like to see this lineup get a few more goes. I kind of like Chance in that leadoff spot. I would like to see it go maybe not only this weekend but next weekend too.
I haven't really figured out what the issue is with Imani right now, particularly in league play. When you look at the strikeout totals, Imani on the season has struck out 20 times. By comparison, and these are different kind of hitters, right? But by comparison, Hunter Hines has 38, DJ has 40, Kohler has 28, Hizak has 17. So it's not the strikeouts that just leap off the page at you, but it just isn't working, particularly in league play.
I think, and I could be wrong, I mean, you're still facing SEC pitching. I think dropping him down in the lineup to that, you know, 7, 8, 9 area could help him. Just allowing him to get a little bit more protection, see some more pitches. But I mean, but you can't really just single him out. I mean, even just if you're just going to talk about last night, obviously you stated it with only having two hits. I mean, you look at your first four hitters and you go 1 for 14 with three strikeouts, and the three strikeouts. I mean, that's not a huge deal in 14 at bats, I guess, but one hit with your first four hitters, that's unacceptable. I mean, truthfully.
6 of the 9 innings that we came to the plate, we were retired in order. So we were retired in order in the first, second, third. We sent 5 guys to the plate in the fourth. That was the only time, well, I guess there in the seventh, where we had any threat whatsoever. So in the fourth, with 2 outs, Dakota Jordan has 1 or 2 hits. And by the way, it's an infield. It's a ground ball to third. Then Hunter Hines walks. And, you know, now you're thinking maybe Hizak can run into one, but he hits into a fielder's choice. That ends the 2-out threat there. Retired in order in the fifth and again in the sixth. In the seventh, Hizak has a double, one of the few well-hit balls. Kohler reaches on an error. But then you get a ground out, and that ends it. Then you're retired in order in the eighth. The only base runner you have in the ninth is a walk with 2 outs to Hunter Hines. And so put that in perspective again. So 9 times you go to the plate. 6, you're retired in order. 1 time you send 4 guys to the plate, and the other couple you send 5. There was never a time in the ball game where we sent more than 5 guys to the plate. Meanwhile, if you want to turn it around, after the second inning, so in the first inning, Vanderbilt gets the 2 home runs. In the second inning, they get the single, manufacture the run. But then I thought Steven, you know, he turns around, right, because he retires the side in order in the third and the fourth and the fifth, again in the sixth, pitches around some trouble in the seventh, and gave up the leadoff double in the eighth, but then – gets a fly ball, and then Schulke comes in to finish it. There's so many times when Bart and I get together on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning, and I say, man, we didn't move a runner here. We didn't. This is a ball game that I sit back and I look and I say, nothing happened. Nobody was especially dominant. Nobody was especially great. I don't know that either side is going to wake up today and say, what about that game by anybody, save maybe for Cunningham.
After the first inning, the game was over. I mean, looking back on it. So, I mean, just the long balls are what got you. And that's – sometimes that's how it is. That's baseball.
Vanderbilt had 5 hits. We had 2. 4-0 ball game. We left 5 guys on the bases. They left 2. I mean, there just wasn't – there weren't a lot of threats. There weren't a lot of missed opportunities really either way. Overall hitting, we were 2-for-30. That makes for a batting average in a game of .067. Vanderbilt 5-for-28 for .179. 2-out hitting. Both our hits, by the way, came with 2 outs. So we had a whopping .167 with 2 outs. Vandy 1-of-9. Just wasn't a lot to see. I think, though, for me, you know, you go back, everything sequential, and in series, they all build on each other. I thought worse – this is going to sound weird to say worse than the loss, but I think dangerous adding to the loss is the fact that Vanderbilt, keep in mind, they're without a pitcher this weekend. So Vanderbilt, normally, you would have expected to go in the Sunday game with J.D. Thompson. Thompson, in the Sunday ball game last week, was ejected for use of a foreign substance, and there's been some discussion about whether it was sunscreen. You know, that's the thing pitchers like to do. Get some sunscreen, pick up the rosin bag, mix it all together, and life's pretty good, right? Yeah. Get a spin rate. But he's gone. Here's what's crazy. You go back and people talk about having midweek baseball games. The suspension for a pitcher is 4 games. Had you played 2 midweek games this week, then he comes back and pitches like nothing ever happened in the next SEC weekend, because you knock 2 of them out and you can throw him on Sunday. But because they had just won, a game, by the way, that Vanderbilt had to win on a walk-off home run, then you're not going to see him. But, man, you start to talk about saving pitching. Neither team, I will say this, other than your starters, nobody's burned for anybody. But I thought Vanderbilt probably in a tougher spot pitching-wise.
Yes, sir. That kind of like you mentioned with the suspension and then – you know, having to win it on a walk-off, but and they have a few guys that are working their way back from injury. Yeah, definitely not a Vandy staff that Mississippi State fans would be used to facing in years past.
So Gerangelo is going to go in the game tomorrow, which means somebody has to start the game today. I don't know where you go, and I think now understand why you throw Gerangelo on Sunday, because we're big on wanting guys to have a full week. No issues there. But the concern that I have is I don't know if you can go Carson Ligon. I don't know if you go Brooks Auger. But I think we've seen enough of Auger to say that on his best day, and this is not a knock on Auger, he just hadn't been stretched out to be a starter, really. I think on his best day, you couldn't expect Auger to give you more than 4 innings.
No, I agree. And that's why it's going to be an uphill battle. I mean, you got to have a decent start from whoever you throw. Can't dig yourself a hole like you did last night. And so I think it's, I mean, crucial for today, but crucial for the entire weekend to get. You don't have to necessarily get going early, but you have to limit the damage early for sure.
Who would you start today?
I think I would probably go Auger again. I mean, he started out all right last weekend against Auburn. But I'd either go Auger or back to Evan Sierra, but I think that the way that ballpark plays, I think they might have a field day with Sierra, hit some out of the park.
See, that's my concern, is balls can fly there. And the thing that concerns me is just Sierra, just the ball seemed to get in the air against him. And I was listening because there are some guys – I was listening to a show the other day, and they were talking about, hey, I like this guy in this stadium. And it got me to thinking, if you put me in Omaha, I feel pretty good with Evan Sierra on the mound.
Yeah.
Particularly absolutely. If I got a little speed in the outfield. I mean, it's a big outfield, but the balls tend to get some hang time, and they don't tend to be the moonshot 450 things. They're, you know, sometimes you just need 10 more feet, and the ball just doesn't fly out there. I think you could make an argument that Sierra is a better pitcher in what it used to be TD Ameritrade. I don't know what we call it now. Forget. Bart would correct me if
Charles
he were here.
Schwab.
Is that what it is?
I think so.
That is right. That's who acquired TD Ameritrade. So that makes sense. I think you make the argument that he would be better there than at home.
I agree. I mean, we have a lot of guys who are, you know, pitch to contact pitchers. And so all these Cracker Jack parks are, we're at a disadvantage immediately. So, and kind of like you mentioned, especially with the way Omaha is, I think we would benefit tremendously from that.
By the way, we mentioned we're in the Farm Bureau studios. When today is over, I am going to go home. I'm going to sit on my back porch, and I am going to do some country-pleasing sausage. Bart is in a place right now where if they have country-pleasing, he took it there. I guarantee you they're not selling. I don't even know what you can get where he is. I don't know, fish and chips, things like that. But it's nothing you want to eat. That's why I live here in Mississippi, and I'm going to go by Walmart, get some jalapeno cheddar, some three cheese. Are you like a – have you ever had like the pork and pineapple?
I have. I love that one.
So my that's like my wife's favorite. I've got some friends. My favorite is, you know, they have the country-pleasing sausage dog. Not sausage dogs. What do you call them? I guess you'd call it a sausage dog, right, at the games. When you can get – because now and then, sometimes it's the original, and that's good. But when you get a little slaw on top of the jalapeno cheddar, now we're rolling.
Absolutely. That's now you're talking my language.
I'm going to do that. Also, going to go through Strange Brew, get another cup of coffee because it's one of those kind of days at home and enjoy. Hey, so are you a Keurig guy?
I am. It's a lot more convenient as a college student to just – pop it in there and then let it run.
See, I did not drink coffee very often when I was in college. I liked the idea of coffee. I loved the smell of it, but I didn't necessarily like it. And then somewhere along the way through law school, I became a full-fledged coffee guy. And now every morning, run through Strange Brew. Shane and the guys over there have been great. Hey, one other thing I wanted to talk about was the work we've got going on with the Bulldog Initiative right now and some things that relate to students. Hey, be a little on the lookout, by the way, for some things surrounding the Hardy concert. We'll keep you posted on that. But if you go by and you see our friends Wyatt Craig over at Maroon & Company, they've been great to us. They have an entire section of Bulldog Initiative gear. Earlier this week, we had a really cool thing. I mean, our charitable partner is a group called Champions for Literacy. It used to be Coaching for Literacy. Now it's Champions for Literacy. And the reason they changed the name was because they started getting involved not just with coaches, but with athletes. And the Bulldog Initiative was their very first collective partner, and I would dare say still their leading partner. But what we do is we work with them to help promote their charitable activities. And earlier this week, we had an event with local students here in Starkville. We had about 50 second and third graders that came up to the rooftop on top of the lofts at the baseball field. And we had about 10 football players. Josh Hubbard was there. We had volleyball, softball, soccer all represented. And I will tell you, there are a few people that just really jumped out at me. Becca Walk. You remember Becca Walk, the volleyball player? She's incredible working with kids. Josh Hubbard was great. Stone Blanton was there. He was incredible. The guy who really jumped out to me, Demonte Russell. And one of the things you always look for on a team or who are the leaders going to be year after year. Last year on our defense, I think you could look and you got Buki, you got Jet, you got Crumity, and somewhere, depending on who it is and the time of day, those guys are the leaders of that defense. Demonte Russell, I'm just telling you, and I want to have him on the podcast here soon. Demonte Russell is not just a leader of that defense. He is going to be an amazingly successful person. He was the first person in his family to graduate. He not only has one degree, he's about to have his master's degree. And to watch that guy working with kids, it was moving. Jordan Mosley was that way. I don't want to leave anybody out. There were others, Isaac Smith, I mean, Jacoby Jackson, all these guys. But, man, I'm just telling you, Demonte Russell is like a next-level guy. When you sit down and you talk to Demonte Russell, you talk to a John Lewis, we're going to jump to football a minute. I really feel like this is going to be a better team with better leadership than we were a year ago.
I hope so. I mean, I think we all do, but going back to what you said, it's easy to root for people like that. And he's a guy that's been around for 4 or 5, maybe even 6 years. So I think it's really about time, not meaning this in a negative connotation, but it's really about time for him to, you know, step up and be that guy on the defensive side of the football.
No, I think it is. You look at the offense right now, Chapin looked really good in the spring game. Feel good about him. Kevin Coleman is really good at wideout. Kelly Akari looks really good. I think offensively, Mosley looked good. Creed was hurt in the spring game. He's going to be good. I think offensively we're going to score points. I'll tell you the guy right now. So I'm going to give you my pick to be this is my favorite thing to do every year, say, all right, who is going to be the highest draft pick on this team in next year's draft? I'm not talking about ever, but next year. And I'm going to tell you that my pick is a guy that doesn't get talked a lot, and that's Sadu Traore. He's going to be a star in the NFL. He had to sit out last year, which is, you know, under current rules, would never happen. But this guy, Jeff Lebby, is going to make that guy a lot of money. Big, fast, smart. He's also British, which kind of adds an air of sophistication to everything. Maybe Bart can find us another Sadu over there. But, all right, did you watch any of the spring game?
I did. I mean – and, you know, when I played football in high school, I always hated spring football, you know, just as a player, just because it's baseball season, you got to get back into the swing of things. But, you know, as a fan, you always look forward to the spring game, and you can only take away so much just because you're playing each other. And so either one side's going to look really good or, you know, vice versa. But, you know, I thought it went about as well as a spring game could. I thought the offense – defense kind of shined a little bit earlier, but offense kind of got going. And I thought it was exactly what you wanted to see from the offensive side of the ball. I think the defense I think they'll come up to speed. I hope so anyway.
I told somebody the other day, because I lived through the scoreless spring game of the Sylvester Croom era. And you're right, you're playing each other. You never know. I told somebody, though, that what I wanted to see was competency at quarterback. I wanted to see us look good throwing the football, recognizing everything's going to be base, nobody's getting hit, it's going to be generic. But I thought Blake Chapin showed you enough to make you excited about where you're going to be at that position. Agree or disagree?
I agree, and I think it's – and I was a Will Rogers fan, and so I think the difference in caliber of quarterback was glaring. You know, even with Chris Parson and Van Buren, as little as we saw them, but it was just the offense just looked completely different with their leadership in it.
All right, so here's what I'm going to do before we call it a day here on this special Saturday Argue with the Old Guy edition. I want your three hottest takes on Mississippi State sports right now. Three things you don't like, three things you want to change, three things you're happy about, it doesn't matter. Your hottest opinions right now, the things that if we were partaking right now that you'd want to argue about or you would say forcefully.
The first thing that comes to mind, and I argue with people over this all the time, whether it be at home or at the fraternity house, and this is just me, I think there's a greater chance that Mississippi State wins 6 or 7 football games than there is that we win 4. And that's what everyone says. Everyone says, "Oh, we're going to go 4-8 or 3-9," which I don't see that in our cards.
All right. So let's say it this way. Let's say we were going down to the casino, and I gave you a marker, and you had to put it on a number. You had to put it on a number of wins, but you were going to get a range of you could go 1 up, 1 down. Meaning, so if you put your marker on 7, you're a hit. If it goes 6, 7, or 8, you lose. If it's 9 or higher, 5 or lower, right? You got me? So basically, you can cover 3 wins in your range. Where are you, to win $1 million, where are you putting your chip?
I think I'm going with 6.
So 5, 6, or 7 is your number. I'm going to be bold here. I'm putting mine on 7.
I like it. I mean, I say 6 just because I think that's the safe play. And that's what I tell everybody. My prediction is 6-6. And
Are you counting the bowl game? Are we talking just regular season or bowl game?
Just regular season. If you're wanting to go bowl game, then I may go 7. But we gotta get to that point again first.
Well, yeah, that's right. So we got to get that 6 number to get there. All right. So your first take is it's more likely we win 6 or 7 than to win 4 or 5. Is that a fair way to summarize that?
Yes, sir.
All right. I don't think you're going too far out there, although that would probably get some people wanting to fight with you back at the fraternity house. All right. Sure. What's your second take?
My second take, and this is I feel like a lot of people may agree with this, but I think that, and with the expectation of Mississippi State baseball, I think you have to go beyond a regional for this staff to stay.
All right, now we get the gloves off. Okay, so here, let me make my argument as to why I disagree. So I just want to make sure I understand it. Your position is basically everybody's got to go if we don't make a super.
Yes, sir.
Is that your position?
That's my position.
All right, let me tell you why you're wrong. Bear with me, because there are going to be a lot of people who agree with you. Let me tell you why I disagree. Because I watched last year, or 2 years ago, doesn't matter, Arkansas win the SEC, had a really good baseball team, and they get beat in a regional at home. They don't advance. Nobody's trying to get rid of Dave Van Horn, right? Now, you could make the argument, yeah, they've been in regionals. I get all that. But isn't it more, though, of I know it when I see it than it is a hardline metric? Meaning, let me give you the example. Let's say that we get to a regional, we've played well, we've scored runs, we've just run out of pitching, and on the last day we go out there, we got Cal Steven, and – you know what, he just doesn't have it. He just can't land the breaking pitch that day. Or let's say first day. He doesn't have it. You've now used his start. It didn't work, but he's been a guy that's been around the – giving you a chance in all but 2 games that he's been on the field this year. I mean, is that really – are we going to stick to that?
It's such a cut and dry situation with the state of Mississippi State baseball. But, you know – you can say, you know, what if this, what if that. But ultimately, it's the coach's job. I mean, they literally get paid to do it. It's their job to have this team prepared not only for February, but for May and June to get to that point. So, I'm going to stick with it.
Okay. I mean, you're not backing down.
The expectation and the standard for Mississippi State baseball is here, and that's – we're not just a make it to a regional team or make it to a regional program.
All right, so point one, I think we were basically on the same page. Point two, we have a divergence, and I expect that if we were to go poll people, you'd get some either way. All right, and what's your third? The voice of the Mississippi State student.
My third take. This is a little bit harder.
See, I was waiting on you. I thought I had you set up to come out of the box with, and obviously we didn't talk about it, but I was waiting on you to talk about LED lights or a sound system or improved seating for students. That's what I was expecting. Maybe reseating the hump. I was waiting on something there.
Yeah, I mean, but that's going to happen eventually. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a hot take to say that those things need to happen. About the football stadium, I mean, and I love Davis Wade. I never miss a game, never miss a snap. Stay to the very end for every single game. I love our stadium, and you know, contrary to popular belief, I think it's one of the better ones in the SEC. But it is it's a little outdated. But I think that those upgrades are gonna happen at some point. So I don't necessarily think that's a hot take. And I think they need to happen, obviously. So, yeah, I don't really think that, you know, gets grouped into the hot take category. As far as the hump goes, I think everyone's, and I say everyone, like you said, from a student standpoint, I think everyone's on board with moving, you know, back to the side and not behind the goal. So I don't know if that's maybe a hot take from your vantage point.
All right, last last question for you is this. What chances do you give Mississippi State beating Ole Miss in football this season?
So, and we're going back to the prediction, the 6 or 7 wins. People always say, where are you going to find those wins? Well, I give us the 4 non-conference games. I give us Florida at home, with that being their first true road game with, you know, whoever's going to play quarterback with them. I don't think it really matters. I think they're going to be teetering at that point. So whether it's Lagway or Mertz, I think that could be the game that puts the final nail in Napier's coffin. So I'm giving us that one. That's 5. I give us the Arkansas game. Get them at home. So, you know, anything can happen there. And then with that 7th win, obviously I'm saying we're going 6-6. But if you're going to give us a 7th win, I'm either circling A&M at home or the Egg Bowl. And so with the Egg Bowl, I think it's obvious that Ole Miss is a more talented team than us right now before the season starts. But then again, that's part of it. You got to play the games for a reason. And so Thanksgiving night, 2024, I think anything can happen. I mean, people always say that with the Egg Bowl, but that really is the truth. I mean, if you look back at this year's Egg Bowl, I mean, we were dreadful on offense. And our defense was fine. But Ole Miss, you would have thought that they were going to beat us 45-0 the way it had been going.
I thought the thing that hurt us defensively last year was lack of depth on the defensive side of the ball, and in particular along the defensive front.
Yeah,
I look at a guy like Nathan Pickering. When you're playing over 50 snaps at defensive, well, nose guard in the SEC, that's not – and I remember – so I'm going to give you my hot take here. My hot take on football the past 2 years is that we brag about having the number one and number two tacklers in the SEC, and that's bad that we did. And the reason that it's bad that we did is because we had to keep 2 really, really good football players on the field.
Yeah.
All the time. And if there were a thing with Jet and Buki that I would have wanted, it would have been a little more speed at times. Well, it's hard to be fast when you're playing every snap of every game. And particularly, I mean, those weren't little guys. Those were big guys. And so I think one of the things that we're going to see defensively this year is we're going to see a lot more guys. In fact, I was talking, you know, one of the guys who's played really well in the spring and has turned a lot of heads on the coaching staff is Nick Mitchell. Nick Mitchell is a guy from Jacksonville. He played a lot last year almost solely on special teams. And he's a guy right now that, as you look at it, will very likely, I don't know that you'd say be a starter, but play starter snaps. He'll play starter minutes. And I think that's because it's not the old Manny Diaz or Jeff Collins or whoever it was, the 1A, 1B thing. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about, though, is not whole. It's not hockey. We're not going to run off one defense and bring another one on. I think you're going to see, though, a lot of guys, hey, this guy's got 3 snaps, then you're out, and this guy's in for 2. And now we're rolling. And I just think you're going to see a lot of people have to fit together. And I think because of that, I think one of the things that Mississippi State's really tried to do in the portal this year is you go back and you say, what's a Suleiman Paka going to give you? What's a Kedrick Bingley-Jones going to give you at nose guard, at defensive tackle? You look at some of the other guys they're talking about. Hey, what's a Nick Mitchell who's been on the roster? What are they going to do for you? I think they're going to give you more snaps. And if there is a bright side to J.P. Purvis missing a little bit, you know what you've got in J.P. It's that Nick Mitchell in the spring kind of showed who he was. So I thought all that is a long way to say that last year I thought we got in a lot of trouble late in games in particular because we just flat didn't have enough dudes up front. Now, to make everything work, you still need Dinkins healthy. You still need Travion Williams healthy. You still got to have a lot of those things. But I look around, and I think it's time, too, for guys like Zachary Tillman, some of those guys, to take a step forward. So, anyway, long answer. But we'll get together again. We'll talk football. Anyway, hey, by the way, if you're going to be in town next weekend, the Starkville Derby is going on. There's a lot of things going on in Starkville. One of the things is the Saturday morning farmers market. I drove right past it on my way to the Farm Bureau studios today. So a lot going on. You got the Old Main Music Festival coming up, the Del Rendon Music Festival. So Music and Arts Festival, Dale Rendon. So a lot of things going on here in Starkville. Go to Starkville.org. They've got a remade website talking about all the things going on. And if you're coming in town next weekend for the Alabama series, go ahead, check it out, make your reservations, and find a good place to eat while you're here. But tell you what, we'll get back together. We'll talk some more. I'll be here for Sunday Coffee. Lewis, man, thanks for hanging out.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it.
All right. See you soon.